whether it was an asteroid coming, something that would end humanity on Earth as dinosaurs were ended at one time. Okay, we've got a spaceship that can go, as Matt Damon did in the movie, plant a colony somewhere. We can have humans survive this terrible disaster about to befall. If you could decide what 40 people you put on the spacecraft that would save humanity, how many of those would be same-sex couples? Basically, a modern-day Noah. You have that ability to be a modern-day Noah. That's why it's been called part of the natural law. Natural law given by the Creator. We don't have much longer to go.
Expressing yourself is good. I do it all the time. I would encourage you to do the same. And whoever it is that is expressing themselves in whatever way they see fit, that doesn't, of course, hurt other people, I always want to encourage that. But when you're expressing yourself with respect to one subject or another, and say you're expressing yourself about something that doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people, it makes a ton of sense to you, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to, say, normal folks, regular folks, the less hateful type. Well, then you end up going off on a rant, like Mr. Gohmert from Texas there did when he's talking about that dang old great Matt Damon in the damn good dude. And you sound pretty ridiculous, right? What if the spaceship comes and the dang gum and you want to take some people with to colonize the moon or colonize Mars and you're not gonna take any homosexual couples because they can't make no babies. And it sounds ridiculous. And when you believe ridiculous things, when you express those ridiculous ideas, those ridiculous outdated ideas, yeah, you get to be made fun of. And when you express those things, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. And then you end up talking about Matt Damon's poop or whatever the hell you were talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 207. My name is Melvin. Thank you so much for being here. I apologize that I wasn't here last week. So here's what's going to happen now that we are inside summertime. Obviously, I have a small business. I mentioned this last year and, you know, been going quite a while on that thing. And now that we are in summer, it tends to eat up all of my weekends. When I'm not doing the show, I'm certainly thinking about next week's show and what I can do on next week's show. And so I'm doing that, but I won't always be able to put out a show. I listen to Alex Jones sometimes, and I know I'm fairly certain he's got, now if you watch him on the TV machine, he's got a gang of papers on his desk, right? It makes it look like he's got research, he's got sources that he's citing, and he's got important things he wants to talk to you. But if you listen to him talk, he just rambles and goes off the deep end about stuff that's completely made up. He lives in an absolute world of make-believe. And I was thinking, I go, you know, I actually read things. Books, magazines, articles, things that I read the whole book or the whole article. I'm inside of one book right now called The Alphabet Versus the Goddess, and it's taking me quite a bit to read. It's about 400 or 500 pages, but I'm going to see it through. And the reason it is such a heavy read, first of all, it's long, it's small type, no pictures, so obviously and it's more than 150 characters, so the president's not going to have any interest in it whatsoever, but the amount of knowledge that is packed into this little book is mind-blowing, and I find myself having to go back and reread things because if I try to read through it at, say, the normal pace that I read things, there's an awful lot of information. And I was saying to my wife the other day, I go, you know, I'm not going to be able to put – and this is last week. You know, I was able to put out a show last week. And I said, hon, I can't put out a show. She goes, I thought you had one you were working on. Oh, you have one that I'm working on, but it's not quite ready yet. And I had just got done seeing Alex Jones on YouTube. And I go, you know, if I wanted to, I could just open the mic and I could just spew about absolutely nothing and I could make crap up and I would have a full show before you knew it. You know, much like Alex Jones does. I said, rather than spending all of my time reading and learning and putting a lot of thought into and making audio clips and all this stuff, I said, I could do that and I could put out a show. But you know what? I'd like to put out something true, something that I can be proud of, and something that I'm not going to blush if I find out that somebody that knows me is listening to. With that aside, thank you for being here. We began today with a story that was making the rounds on the internet machines for a little while, and it seems to have just completely gone away. Now, one of the things that made Donald Trump palatable to the log cabin Republicans was that he seemingly wasn't anti-gay. He's not anti-gay. Like all these other Republicans, he's not anti-gay. And there are no shortage of gay Republicans on YouTube saying, yeah, I'm gay and I'm a Republican and I voted for Donald Trump. But it's cool because unlike all the other Republicans, he's not gay. Well, or he's not anti-gay. So there are two ways you can be with on this. You can be okay with it, you know, like I'm good with it. I don't have a problem with gay people. Or you can be like a Republican where they're, oh my God, it's the queers are everywhere and they're taking over. Or you can do what Donald Trump has done, which is the third way, which not a lot of people take, but pay lip service to the fact that you're okay with it, but then fall dead silent when it's happening around the world. So the headline is, Chechnya detains 100 gay men in first concentration camps since the Holocaust. This according to the International Business Times in the UK. More than 100 gay men have been detained in a concentration camp-style prison in the Russian region of Chechnya. According to reports by local reporters and human rights organizations, the arrests are being made as part of a widespread anti-LGBT purge in the area. The prison camps are the first to be established for LGBT people since the Second World War. So we talked about what's happening in Chechnya a little bit. And here's the other thing. So that thing is still happening in Chechnya. And then the Republican Congress, and Congress is controlled in both houses right now by the Republicans. And what's happening there is they're passing or trying to pass either in D.C. or in state houses a lot of bills that make discrimination legal. They're writing discrimination into our laws. And so much, Donald Trump got so much credit, you know, for speaking, hey, I'm not, but he's fallen silent. He's fallen silent on what's happening in Chechnya. He's fallen silent on what's happening in Iran. He's fallen silent on what's happening in the state houses here in America. And I understand I talk about this subject a lot. And I feel like I need to. I'm a strong ally. That's for sure. But I feel like it's ridiculous that I have to make mention of this at all. I will never understand the anti-gay people. You know, the people that freak out when they see two dudes holding hands, you know, or two ladies holding hands. And then there's the whole thing with porn. And I don't watch a lot of porn. Actually, I don't watch any porn these days. I did in my 20s, but I don't now. And there's a thing that happens in porn. And I was reading an article a number of months back, and it says that we need to make porn more real. I understand that I'm killing boners for a lot of you right now, and I apologize about that. But they said, well, what we have are actors in movies. And we've got these very pretty, you know, very feminine women in these porn movies, you know, that get down together, two lovely ladies getting down together. And they go, and so that makes guys, and so guys, no matter what religion they belong to, no matter what they believe, they're completely okay with that, you know. But they see two dudes kissing, they're going to walk up, they're going to punch them in the mouth, you know. But if it's the two ladies, and it says, and it's not real. Now, porn isn't supposed to be real. But when you have that kind of thing, you know, and when you have, say, pop stars, lady pop stars kissing, but they're not really gay, they just kind of want to get a rise out of everybody, what it does is it distorts the reality. Now, I'm not saying that we should begin making, you know, all lady porn with, you know, the more butch of the ladies, but we do need to be more conscious about what we do. And one of the reasons it's important to talk about this is because when I was younger, it was fairly hard for a kid to come by porn. You know, dad had to leave his Playboys out, but those weren't that bad. He left his Hustlers out, and oh my God, that's a whole nother thing. Or in my house, one of my mom's boyfriends, I saw this more than a few times, where he would go to the video store, rent a VHS tape of pornography, bring it home, watch it, and then you can just let your imagination go from there. But that's these little harder for kids, you know, young kids to come by. But, well, with the internet, that's not the case anymore. So it no longer gets to be just pure fantasy. This is where, generally, even before mom and dad get to say anything, this is where more and more of our kids are beginning to learn about sex. I remember we learned sex ed in sixth grade. Well, generally by the time a kid gets to sixth grade now, especially if they're a boy, they've already seen, you know, quite a bit of porn or pornographic pictures or pictures or videos or because it's on the internet and it's free. And to prove that you're 18, you just got to click yes. That's not somebody checking your ID. The relationship that we have with our gay brothers and sisters in America is to some degree one of convenience, whereas the really macho straight guys are totally cool with the two ladies getting down as long as it's two pretty ladies, but those dudes, my God, you know, I'll punch you in the mouth. And we needn't do that. First of all, we need to understand that there's absolutely nothing wrong with being gay, and that our fear, the problems that we have with it, come largely from religion. Religion's told us that you can and cannot, and this is what you have to do, and this is what you can't do, and all these other things. All this magical thinking, you know, these things that are really rooted in absolutely nothing, that tell us what we should do and how we should be. And it needs to go away. And we need to start seeing our gay brothers and sisters like we see ourselves, like we see our friends and neighbors and other people that we love, and stop judging people based on that. And there's another belief that just blows my mind. And I'm sorry to the porn industry. I'm telling you, you have to start being more conscious. Okay? Because it's not just the pervy guys in the trench coats that are seeing your porn anymore. It's kids. And that's generally the first place to learning about sex. So you might want to change it up a little bit. And I know that that's not as profitable. But in the long run, it's really going to be better for the rest of us. And there's this other idea that they can't raise children. Now, hold up. So one of my youngest daughter's friends has two mommies. And I've met both mommies, and they're both very, very delightful. And their kids are great and well-adjusted and all the rest. But the two, let's see, I'm trying to remember. I think the one of the moms is actually an aunt, you know, and then her girlfriend or wife, forgive me, I don't know which one. But when I meet the kids, I go, it's insane to me that there are religious folks pushing the idea right now that the gay is so bad that it would just be better if they were in a foster home awaiting a straight, natural, white Christian couple, blah blah blah. And I go, I couldn't imagine, because and this kid that my youngest is friends with is just a delightful child. And it's as far as I'm concerned, it's her best friend. Because whenever I say, hey, you want to go outside and play? This is the one friend she always asks to play with. And I go, man, could you imagine if we really did adhere to this psycho idea that gay people shouldn't be raising kids? My daughter wouldn't have this. You know, and this is one of those friends she's going to be able to look back on and go, wow, my... You know what made my childhood great? You know, this friend made my childhood great. And love. And it's an old idea, I understand. Love is love. We shouldn't have kids in homes just because the parental units don't adhere to your very rigid ideas of what a family should be.
You say that the traditional two-parent household is without certainty accounts for both the physically and emotionally healthier children that are less likely to use drugs, alcohol, engage in crime, or become pregnant outside of marriage. Outrageous. Zero evidence. Horrible research that was conducted in 2010 before marriage was allowed and freedom to marry was allowed in most of the states. The rigorous research has been debunked again and again and again.
There was a gentleman, and I use the term loosely, There were a few people that celebrated, and I'm fairly certain I've talked about this before, but I'm going to mention it again. There's a few pastors in America that celebrated after the Orlando shooting, where several dozen people were murdered in a nightclub. I'm not going to mention the terrorist's name, you know, and because he went after a gay nightclub, it's pretty clear what he was doing. And one of those pastors was named Kenneth Adkins. And here the headline by Brad Reed over at Raw Story: anti-gay pastor who cheered Orlando nightclub massacre found guilty of child molestation. An anti-gay pastor who said people massacred at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida got what they deserved has been convicted on 8 charges related to child molestation. The Florida Times Union reports that a jury found 57-year-old pastor Kenneth Adkins guilty of child molestation due to a relationship he had with an underage boy and an underage girl who attended his church 7 years ago. In the case, prosecutors claimed that Adkins had methodically groomed 2 teenagers to have sexual intercourse with him when they were just 15 years old. The pastor's male accuser said he wanted to come forward so that the pastor would never again be able to similarly take advantage of young teenagers. The jury came back with a guilty verdict after only an hour of deliberation. And of course, he was sentenced several weeks ago. We have this idea in America that if you're straight and you're white and you're religious, and especially if you're a male, well, my goodness, then you are just the cat's meow, right? You are what's right with America. And then we say, well, if you're gay, you know, or you're black, or you're Mexican, you know, or you're disabled, or all these other things that Donald Trump likes to make fun of, well, by God, there's just something wrong with you. But here's what I've seen recently. I'm watching a gay couple, a loving gay couple, raise 2 beautiful children, and they're doing right by them in every single way. And I've watched a man of the cloth, many men of the cloth, cheer on the murder of 50 gay people in a nightclub in Florida, saying they got what they deserved and that's God's will. And if you ask a pretty good number, not a majority, but a pretty good number of people in America, you know, the gay people that are raising children and the pastor, who do you trust? I can promise you most people are going to say the pastor. And then if you point out that they're raising these children, doing right by them, and raising them in a loving home, and they're turning out great and well-adjusted, getting good grades and all the rest, and then this guy molested children, it might snap their heads back. And it shouldn't. We need to judge people by the things that they do. That's not an original idea. I didn't come up with that. But we need to judge people based on what they do. What this couple is doing is awesome. This gay couple, right? And it's not the only time I've seen it. And most gay folks aren't having kids. And I'm sorry, we're wildly overpopulated. I'm totally okay with the fact that there's not going to be a gang of more people in the world, right? Because gay people aren't making kids. But for the gay people who do want to have families, there's an awful lot of kids in the system that want and need, could definitely use your love. And I want to see them get it. And as far as the religious folks that back Donald Trump, the religious people that say that Donald Trump is a dream president for evangelicals, right? The religious folks that cheered on the murder of gay people. Something wrong with you. Pretty sure it's not God that you're worshiping. So the 2 white police officers that were accused of killing Alton Sterling, you remember Alton Sterling, I'm sorry, I understand there's been an awful lot of black people that have been murdered by police and gotten away with it. Well, the 2 white officers that murdered Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, they're going to get away with it. Jeff Sessions has announced that they will not be seeking federal charges against these 2 police officers. And as a matter of fact, in Jeff Sessions' America, I can promise you that anytime a black man or woman, it's mostly men though, are murdered by police, they're not going to be approached by his Justice Department. So I want to say a couple things. I know whenever I talk about this particular subject, it can make me seem anti-cop. Not the case. I, for years, was trying to become a police officer. This is a job that I see as necessary. This is a job that I felt like I could do. I went through quite a bit of the police testing, got down to the end, and it turns out that maybe I wasn't the best candidate, but it's something that when I look back on my life, I think to myself, what could I have done differently in my life so that I could have been better prepared for this line of work? We think about it so much in terms of this, that when you think about these cops getting away with murdering black people, right? Or you see videos of crooked cops on YouTube or whatever. You think, my God, what kind of testing are they doing? And then you hear about all the white supremacists that are in the police department. Jeez, they're just giving anybody a badge and a gun, aren't they? Not so. Oh, absolutely not so. Now, I'm not angry, and I'm not racist, and I'm not, you know, a redneck or stupid or anything like that. But something with the very stringent testing that they put you through, you know, which acts as a filter, suggested that I might not be the best candidate to be an officer. Now, I suppose if I really, really wanted to, I could make a case that the testing is flawed, but I would really just be engaging in a form of confirmation bias. I would just be twisting things so that I could feel better about myself about not being able to become an officer. And I don't want to do that. I like to think that they've come to the testing that they have now for you to become a police officer through years and years of study and trial and error and all kinds of other things. And in the testing that I went through, I can tell you, I think that they're doing it right. And I think that they are by and large picking good people. So what happens here? What happens when an officer murders a black man? Well, and gets away with it. It's pretty clear that some folks are getting through that should not. And we're human. We can't catch them all. You know, we can't keep them all from getting in. But for the ones that do get in, and for the ones that do commit atrocities like this, we need to have a Justice Department and an Attorney General that is absolutely willing to go after them and investigate them. Now, they might find nothing. They might find that the officers acted completely within their jurisdiction. Or they might not. And that's what we want. But Jeff Sessions is a hardcore racist. And he's not going to go after them. He's not going to investigate them. Because he goes, oh, dead black people, that's just fine. That's Jeff Sessions' thing. That's his mojo. That's what he likes. And then the police, you know, that do this stuff, they just get away with it. And then here's the other thing that I want to point out. I understand that there's a lot of these videos of black men getting killed by police that end up online. We see them, they generally get pulled down. But that in and of itself, that's not necessarily the whole story either. So folks like me see a video like that, read the stories about it, and then we walk away and we nod our heads and we go, man, these police are out of control. And then this is what folks like myself who are concerned about this kind of thing, we start getting this idea in our heads that police are bad people, right? And that all these officers are just racist and they're just looking for a black man to shoot, right? And they just got their finger on a trigger finger and they can't wait to kill somebody. Now, an investigation of this, an investigation of these murders, like an investigation of the two officers that killed Alton Sterling, well, it would do two things. It would let us know what really happened with Alton Sterling, if it was a justified shooting or not. And it would let us know more about the officers. And it wouldn't just be good for Alton Sterling's family. It wouldn't just be good for the Baton Rouge Police Department. It would be good also for the federal government and for the Justice Department. And it would be good for folks like me who have their doubts about our police these days. I want to know what happened. But since Jeff Sessions has decided not to go forward with an investigation, well, I'm going to judge Jeff Sessions very harshly. I'm going to judge the police officers somewhat harshly. But To be honest, I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I've got some videos. I've got some articles. I don't know what happened. And Jeff Sessions' Justice Department has said, that's just fine. And you know what? That's not just fine with me. I don't hate police. And I don't want to hate police. And I don't want other people to hate police. I grew up in San Diego, and it was emblazoned. I mean, it's emblazoned on a lot of police cars. Protect and serve. Protect and serve. Right? And I grew up in some of the darkest, dankest ghettos. Right? And some areas I lived in were so crime-ridden, police rarely ever came through. There were more than a few times as a young man that I called 911, and I'm not kidding you, the police didn't even show up. Now, I don't know if they didn't show up because they were too busy or if they just didn't want to come into my hood, but that was the reality that I lived in as a young man. But I remember seeing "to protect and serve" written on their doors, and I loved those words, right? To protect and serve. I would generally see officers questioning people, arresting people, you know, roughing people up, or they'd come to our school with McGruff the crime dog, or they'd come to our school with the DARE program, and then I'd get to see the police, you know, more as well-rounded people and human beings and all the rest. But I'd see "protect and serve" on the doors of their cars, and I just loved seeing that. You know, I loved that idea. And I started to get a fairly friendly idea of police. Now, I had a lot of black friends whose idea about police wasn't as friendly. And I go, oh, you know, the police are just, oh, they're just getting a bad rap, you know? And they go, no, they're going after me because I'm black. And I remember hearing that as a young man and going, well, maybe not. It's hard to imagine because San Diego is full of black people. Why become an officer in a place full of black people? You hate black people. I mean, this just didn't make any sense to me as a young man. As I've gotten older, I've realized that there's a large degree of our racial tensions that haven't been dealt with. And a lot of that is definitely exemplified or proven out, I suppose, by the election of Donald Trump, because he got in using racist, nativist language everywhere he went. So I obviously disagree with the Justice Department's decision, and I'm upset about the relationship that we have with our police departments, and I feel like it's only going to further deteriorate if we continue going down this road. That's not going to be good for police. That's not going to be good for the citizens. That's also not going to be good for the Justice Department. Jeff Sessions has also recently come out and said that we are going to go back to our old war on drugs. What the hell does that mean? It means this. Mandatory minimum sentences are coming back. Longer sentences, coming back. You get busted with a joint, 30 years in the joint. That's what it means. And that stuff didn't do anything to solve the drug problem or even alleviate the drug problem. As a matter of fact, it only made it worse. And it's insane to me. The people are completely okay with spending money on that. I will turn on conservative talk radio and I will hear it to no end. I don't want to pay for other people's health care. I don't want to pay for food stamps because I don't want to pay for housing assistance. I don't want to pay for heating assistance. Why do they get to have my money? I hear it all the time. And I don't understand it. Because what the hell are prisoners getting? If somebody gets busted with some dope and they go to prison, especially a private prison, you're going to spend, as a taxpayer, $60,000 a year, right? Depending which prison it is, somewhere between $30,000 and $60,000 a year per prisoner. For what? To lock them up. That's what. You're cool with that, though. If you're feeding hungry people, oh boy, they can rot in hell. But if you're locking them up, you don't mind feeding those people. You don't mind housing those people. You don't mind keeping them warm at night. And it's not bettering society. We're only spending a ton of money and not taking care of the problem. Someone pointed out to me earlier this week a study that was done with rats and drugs. And they, you know, when they put a rat, and I don't want to go with the whole experiment now, but they, you know, they say they put a rat in a cage, you know, and they, you know, they gave him some heroin water and, you know, regular water in one tube and then heroin water in another tube. And the, you know, sometimes he'd drink from the clean water, but a lot of times he'd drink from the heroin water. And he would just keep drinking, and kill until he got sick and he died. And they go, aha, that's what drugs do to you. You get sick and you die, right? And I go, that's not a real experiment. There was another experiment that was done where they gave the rats, you know, they didn't just put one rat in there. They put many rats, and they gave them friends, you know, they gave them a place to sleep. They gave them food. They gave them things, places where they could exercise, and they hung the two bottles again, one water, one laced with heroin. And they quit drinking the heroin water because they were happy, right? They had friends. They had a place to sleep. They felt safe. They had good food. You know, they had a place to hang out and run around and wheels and all this other stuff. And the host pointed out, he goes, happy people generally aren't looking to alter their mindset. Right? People are looking to alter their mindset when they're in pain. And I believe that that's true. And I thought about it. And I remember when I started drinking. And I had not done really anything except a little pot before that. I started drinking at about age 18. And I remember it going through, whoa, what is this? You know, and I felt good. And I go, you know, maybe feel better? More of this. And I would drink more. And I go, oh my God, you know, maybe feel better if I had more of this. And then one time when I was about 19 years old, I was already drunk. And I was hanging out at a party with some friends who were getting high, smoking the pot marijuana. And I go, you know what would make this drunk even better? If I smoked pot too. And I got so sick. Oh my God, so sick. I woke up, I had a big bump on my head. Because we were getting messed up in a garage. And I asked everybody what happened. They go, you left the garage and you were trying to close the garage and you went out and you kept pulling the garage down on your head. It was crazy. And you couldn't figure out why it wouldn't close. You were just beating the hell out of yourself with the garage. And I go, oh my freaking crap. But and as I've gotten older and my life has gotten better, I've moved away from that kind of self-destructive behavior. And I've never really done hard drugs because I became aware of my own mortality at such a young age that I already felt like before I did anything that I was going to die at any minute. I just didn't have much time left on this planet. I'm going to die. And so I never really did the hard stuff. But when I took up drinking, I took it up in a completely unacceptable way. I will say that. But I've got a lot of unresolved issues, you know, painful issues from when I was a child and some other things that I'm dealing with. And I sought to alter my mind because I was definitely in pain. Things have gotten better over the years, but not everything has been resolved. So when we talk about drugs, we talk about alcohol, people do these things not because they need to be locked up, not because they are flawed as a human being, and not because they need to be shamed. They do these things because they are in pain. Remember that. And it's not all the time, right? People can, you know, smoke a J or have a pint and they don't got to get wasted. And so it's not every single person that engages in these things. But I can promise you, if somebody's taking heroin, right? Or somebody's doing coke, you know, or some of these other things that aren't as natural as say, you know, fermented barley or the pot marijuana, you know, well, they do these other things that really just rip your mind and body apart. They're doing so because they're in pain. And if we see it as a problem, then we should treat it as a medical issue and not as a crime. If drugs are really a problem, then we need to treat them in better ways. You know, give people the counseling that they need. You know, if people are hooked on heroin, well, you know, give them a place to sleep and eat and, you know, a safe place to be and, you know, get doctors in there and help wean them off the stuff, and then, you know, talk to them about their mindset and, you know, whatever mental problems they might be dealing with, and help them that way. Because what you do when you lock up an addict is they're still an addict in prison. You can still get drugs in prison. You know, you can get drugs or MP3 players or I know about it. I've got family members that have been incarcerated. Oh, yeah, we get drunk and high in prison all the time. That didn't stop us. So now they're just getting drunk and high on your dime. And I hear it all the time. These welfare recipients are using my money to buy drugs and Cadillacs and beer. And no, they're not. No, they're not. But in prison, after we lock them up, you know, for doing drugs or for selling drugs, yeah, they're kind of doing that. So our attitude towards drugs, right, especially Jeff Sessions' attitude towards drugs, is not going to make the problem better. Quite the opposite. It's actually going to make the problem worse. And it's going to be very, very expensive. But conservatives, Jeff Sessions, Donald Trump, they have chosen how they want to deal with the problem. And they see black people and drugs, you know, or brown people as the biggest scourge of society, and they're going to do something about it. But if a white officer kills a black citizen, yeah, that just it's not even on the radar. We didn't see anything. And then of course there's this. There's the story of Desiree Ferruz. So when Jeff Sessions was going through his confirmation hearings, Code Pink was in the room. They showed up. Some of them were wearing Klan hoods and stuff and saying Klan's number one guy and all this and all this stuff, pointing out what a hardcore racist he is. And then there was one point where they were talking about Jeff Sessions in the hearing, and somebody pointed out that, you know, Jeff Sessions has always been for justice and the little guy or something stupid like that. And Desiree Ferruz from Code Pink laughed. And she was arrested. A couple weeks ago, she was tried and she was convicted. There's going to be a sentencing for her on June 21st. And she's facing a year in prison for laughing at Jeff Sessions. Now, it's not that laughing is illegal, but she broke decorum. You're allowed to sit there, you're allowed to watch. But if you do things, especially once they've started the hearing, that break decorum, you can be held in contempt. And so here's what we've learned from these two particular incidences. First of all, the one in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and what happened during the confirmation hearing for Jeff Sessions. If you murder a black man in America, there's a pretty solid chance that you're going to get away with it, especially now that we've got the head of the Ku Klux Klan running the Justice Department, right? You kill a black man, there's a pretty solid chance you're going to get away with it. But if you laugh at Grand Wizard Sessions, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to go to prison. And that's unfortunately what our priorities, for whatever reason, have become. Before I move on to my next subject, which is my final subject for today's show, I never know what's going to happen in these shows. I planned a hell of a lot more stories than I'm covering right now. But I'm unfortunately going to have to save some of them for next week. Perhaps after I shut the mic off, I'll just do another show and just put it out the week after. Then, hey, that I won't miss the show. But Dale Hansen is a TV anchor down in Texas. And after one of these recent killings, he decided to speak out on his show. And it went viral.
We'll fly our flags at half-mast, we'll say all the right things, we'll make promises we won't keep, and then nothing will change. Our lives will go on while the lives of so many others won't, because we expect it now and we accept it. It wasn't this way when I was a boy, but it is life in America now.
Pointing out the unfortunate reality and also the lack of empathy that we have when it comes to, and when we... when we allow these things to happen, when we allow these things to go unanswered, when we decide we're going to do nothing about it, you know, or we say that it's okay for our police to kill an unarmed black man, but it is not okay to laugh at Jeff Sessions because he's a snowflake. We normalize these things. We have said what is and is not okay, not just through our laws, but with the laws that we have decided to enforce and the ones that we have decided to not enforce.
Police officers are not like you and me. They're better. They run into the darkened alley where we won't go. They run into the buildings we run from. They look for the person we try to hide from. But they're not allowed to make the human mistakes that we all make because they have the power of God strapped to their hip and the authority to use it. When we talk about blindly supporting the blue, when we try to show our support for these brave men and women, we fail to realize we can't defend them all and we shouldn't defend them all. A white man in America doesn't die for selling cigarettes on a street corner. He gets a ticket. A white man in America doesn't die for driving with a broken taillight. He gets a ticket, too. And the officers who abuse the badge and the power they have should be punished, and too many times they're not.
The facts with respect to this are indisputable. And I'm glad that he pointed that out about police officers. Yeah, they're not bad, and they are a necessary thing. And what they do in our society, well, it's something that a lot of us don't have the guts or the means to do. And a lot of us tend to freak out when things start going south with respect to any situation. And these folks are there, and they're there to help. But we're going to lose a lot of that already in a lot of ghettos in America. And it was certainly in the ghetto that I grew up in. They've got a rule about not snitch. Don't snitch. Don't snitch. Right? And here's a lot of the idea behind that. They go, look, the police are not on our side. The white police are definitely not on our side. You know, and the black police are just a bunch of Uncle Toms. So we need to have our own society here in the ghetto, right? Where we have our black-owned stores, you know, where we have our own, you know, our street corners and our parks, where only we go. And then we in the ghetto dole out our own kind of justice. We don't call the police. We don't give the police information. And that's dangerous. Because that is a colony within a society that does not feel like it is a part of society. And that can't last.
America's problem has come to Dallas now. And our lieutenant governor blames the peaceful protesters because our lieutenant governor is a fool. It was not just an attack on the Dallas police. It was an attack on our basic humanity and the common decency we used to cherish in America. But that's all gone now. We lost that a long time ago. The Rangers lost last night 10-1, and I'm almost embarrassed to tell you I know that.
I know that my little show isn't necessarily going to change these things, but I'm hoping that with what I have said here today, at least among the people that listen to this show, I'm hoping that I can help start a conversation. More to come.
I, too, am ready for news that does not require a shower after delivering it.
So I promised you a personal story, and I'm going to take up the rest of the show for this particular thing. So I have an ailment, and I don't know if I've made an explicit declaration of it on the show or an implicit one or if I've sort of danced around it, but I probably have mentioned it at one time or another. And that is that I have BDD. So let me give you the long and short of it. So that's body dysmorphic disorder. And if you want to look it up, there's a ton of articles on it. And there's varying degrees of it. But the degree that I have always had. I've made mention on this show about the way I grew up. And obviously growing up in that, and what I'm learning now, is growing up in a chaotic world. Like I did, where I didn't know if I was going to live or die. I didn't know if I was going to ever have a place to sleep. I didn't know if I was going to have enough food to eat. I didn't know if I was going to have clothes to wear, if I was going to be able to go to school, which school I was going to be going to tomorrow, because I probably went to about 50 different schools as a kid. And I began looking for ways to gain control of my life. And I think a lot of people do that. When they feel like their life is out of control, they feel like they, you know, they feel helpless. They look for things that they can control, micromanage even. And that's what I did with respect to my body. So in effect, with BDD, I see something that is not there. Now, I can say that out loud, but even as I look down at myself, I see it. But if I point it out to someone else, they will tell me that it is not there. I've got any number of issues with my body. I don't like my chest. I don't like my stomach. I don't like my love handles. I don't like my arms. I don't like the fact that I'm bald. I've got all kinds of things, and I see myself as a gigantic mammal, as a huge whale. I see myself as a big fat ass, and I say that not to make fun of folks that are overweight. I've got a lot of empathy for you. I really do, but you ask my wife or anyone else, and they're not lying when they say it. You know, I'm not overweight, but it doesn't matter. You know, I see what's not there. And because I've got that kind of an issue, I developed it because I had to find something that I could control. And I felt like that was something that I could control. After I turned 30, I began gaining weight. Any number of things caused me to gain, you know, and I'd lose and I'd gain. And I did this yo-yo thing and it wasn't a ton of weight. You know, it was, you know, up 20 pounds, down 25 pounds or whatever, of, you know, up 30 pounds. And I mean, it wasn't like 100 pounds, you know, what would be considered a dad bod now, I suppose that's what I effectively developed at one time. But to me, I saw myself as a sumo wrestler. When I decided that I wanted to become a police officer, one of the tests that they wanted to make us go through was running. I'd never been a runner. I decided, you know what, I want to be an officer bad enough, I'm going to become a runner. I've got a saying, and it's true about anything, and that is that I don't try something. I do it, right? Even if I say out loud, you know what, I'll give that a try. I'm not going to try it. I'm going to try to make an entire life out of whatever the hell that is. And it doesn't matter what it is, because I don't just try things. And when I became an officer, I only had to be able to run a mile and a half in under 12 minutes, which isn't that ridiculous. But that wasn't enough for me. Even after I didn't become an officer, I decided to keep up the running. And I decided that I wanted to have better times, like wanted to maybe run a mile in 7 minutes or maybe in 6 minutes. You know, why not? I wanted to run 2 miles. I wanted to run 3 miles. I wanted to run four. I wanted to run 26.2 miles. I don't just try something. I have to do it and do it to death. There was a period after we moved from Spokane to Portland where because I hadn't been running for a little while, I gained a fair amount of weight, probably 30 pounds. I was probably up there in the neighborhood of, 200 pounds. And it was showing, you know, showing worse than it does for any other time for me. And I decided that I was going to go ahead and take up running again. And what would have been okay was 3 miles, you know, three times a week. That would have been fine, but it wasn't enough for me. I got to that point, I got to 4 miles, and then I got to 5 miles. And then I got to more than 3 days a week. And then I got to on my off days doing all kinds. And I was working myself to death. I was losing the weight, though. I lost about 40, 50 pounds in about 3.5 months. It came off pretty damn quickly. But I put myself through hell to get there. And I said, I just have to get down to 160 pounds. And then I get down to 160 and I go, wow, 160. What if I can get down to 150? And then I get down to 150, and this becomes the game. How low can I go? 149, 148, 147, and before I knew it, I felt weak, and I felt sick. And I was doing all kinds of things because I was playing this very dangerous game with my body. So where am I at now? I've got a very loving, nurturing wife who understands a lot about mental health issues. And one day I decided to go ahead and tell her what the hell is going on with me. And she about spun out of control. She kind of knew it, but it just took for me to admit it. These days, I have a much healthier relationship with my issue. I have a scale in my house, but I don't step on it because I've got a weird thing with numbers. I still run, but I'm not running 12, 13, 14 miles at a time. I've run a half marathon, and I was going to run the full marathon, but then I realized the amount of time that I was dragging myself through that, you know, through that much exercise, how much time I was missing at home, and how I was beating the piss out of myself, and for what? You know, so I could not be around my family, you know, so I can feel weak all the damn time, so I can beat the hell out of my body. Why am I doing that? So I recognize that I have the issue now, and I have addressed it, and I've got a healthier, a much healthier relationship with running now. I'm down to just the 3 times a week, 3 miles, 3 times a week, no more, and generally no less. And I'm okay with that. I recognized my problem and I found something that works for me. And with respect to running, you know, something way outside of my issue, I want to talk with other people about this too. It was also important for me when I became a parent, you know, a parent to children, that one, I was able to keep up with them. Because I wanted to play with them. I wanted to hang out with them. I wanted to play basketball with them. I wanted to do all the things that parents do with their kids. You know, and it was important for me to stay in shape for that particular reason. And the other thing was, if my kids ever got in danger, I wanted to be fit enough that I could get to them fast enough. So whenever we are encouraged to lose weight, we always think to ourselves, let's get a piece of exercise equipment in our house. And that'll be great. And then we get a piece of exercise equipment in our house. We use it for a couple weeks, couple months. Before you know it, you're hanging laundry on it. You're not using it anymore. We go, well, let's just get a gym membership. Sure, let's just get a gym membership, right? You give them your credit card. They automatically charge you every month for your gym membership, whether you show up or not. For you know it, you're not showing up and you're paying for it. And then gyms require this. You got to get in your car. You got to drive there. You got to suit up. And then you do your workout. And then you dress down and you shower and you drive home. And holy hell, you just spent 3 hours at the gym, even though you only maybe worked out for half hour, 45 minutes. You know, it takes a ton of time. And we don't have enough time. But running, my exercise equipment is this. I strap on a pair of shoes and I'm out the front door, you know. And I've measured 3 miles from all different directions outside of my house. And then after it's over, I come back and take my shoes off, I shower, and I'm done. There's a study that came out recently about running. Now, any form of exercise that you do is going to give you your life back, which is to say, we all do things that shorten our life. We, you know, eating sugar, drinking alcohol, you know, eating fatty foods, all of these things, you know, smoking, all of these things tend to shave years off of our life, or shave minutes and months and years off of our life. Through exercise, we can get some of that stuff back, some of that time back. But it doesn't generally add more time. So if in your genes you're sort of predetermined to live X amount of years because people in your family lived X amount of years, well, that's how much time you're going to get back. But there's a study that came out recently in Progress in Cardiovascular Diseases, and the review paper says this. It says, running actually adds years to your life. Now, I mentioned that when I became a parent, I wanted to be able to keep up with the kids, and I wanted to be around for a long time so that they could have me on this planet for as long as they wanted to. This article says 1 hour of running adds 7 hours to your life. Now, it points out that if you do other exercises, those things are good. That is true. Those things are good. And they will help you get back maybe that life you lost through, you know, fatty foods and sugar and alcohol and all these other bad things that we do. But running, and they don't know why, running is the only thing, the only exercise that actually adds more time onto your life. And you go, well, Melvin, Those are the years at the end, right? Those are the years where we're feeble and where we're on drugs and we're crapping ourselves. And who wants those years? But they don't have to be those years. See, I had to find a balance in my life. I had to find a way to deal with this particular mental issue that I had, that I struggled with forever. And once I found that balance, I live a much healthier life now. You know, and I've got people looking out for me and all the rest. And then this becomes that same kind of thing. Find something that works for you. Find something that fits into your life, and then find a balance with it. When I go out to do these road races, I see people in their 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s running right alongside me. And that gives me hope that I don't have to be feeble and broken down and doped up when I get to that age. I can be like these folks that are right next to me. But you have to recognize what your particular issue is. Recognize what your particular needs are. And before it's too late, start taking care of yourself now. This isn't a lecture. You don't have to do what Melvin says. Melvin's not a doctor. And by the way, before you take up any of these, you should see a doctor. Make sure that your heart, your ticker's okay and all the rest. You'd hate to drop dead of a heart attack after, but Melvin told me to run, and then you're dead. And you go, and they go, what were his last words? Oh, his last words were Melvin told him to run. So let's go find out who Melvin is. You know, they open up his iPod and they go, oh my God, where's this radio host? Find this radio host. Melvin, you killed this guy. No. We don't need that. Go talk to your doctor before you do any of these things. But recognize what your needs are. Recognize what your abilities are. You know, and realize that getting older, I mean, I'm almost 40 now, and I feel better now than I did when I was 20. But I've recognized what my problems were, both mentally, physically, you know, and I've found a way to live with them. I found a way to fix some of them, to address some of them, and I'm the better for it. Now, I've got a great support system, you know, I've got the greatest daughters, the greatest wife, and you know, other folks don't know. I guess you in Radioland know this, but to you listening to the show, 95% of my friends don't know that I have this problem. And I can almost promise you those friends aren't listening to this show. If they listen to this show, I guess they're going to know now. But I share it with you because I feel like you could benefit. You know, well, your friends don't listen to your show. Yeah. Because you know why they don't listen to my show? Because I'm like this all the time. My friend Buzz said a while ago, he's a good friend of mine, and I don't think he'll mind that I use his name. Whenever we get together, we talk about all kinds of things, music, politics, but I don't talk about myself. And he would go, God, we know each other for so long, and we talk a lot. He goes, but I feel like I don't know anything about you. Can you tell me something personal about you? And I didn't, not at the time, but I thought about it. And I go, you know, these kinds of stories can help other people. Maybe I should share sometime. And so in the spirit of what he asked of me, I'm sharing it now. And perhaps it helps you. You know, perhaps you've got something unaddressed that you can go forward with and address now. You know, and I hope that me talking about this can be a part of it. Knowledge is always better. You know, you can never have too much knowledge. And the more knowledge you have about something, certainly the better. I guess you can overload on that too, but by and large, no. No, you're just going to be better if you know. And I would encourage you to recognize what you need, go forward, and know. And I should get out of here because I've taken up a ton of your time. Okay, my name is Melvin. Fire your camping out. Our official home is tficpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tficpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store. Just search for the Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail is just a general statement, Eric, or you can email us at tficpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. Rejecting austerity, Paul Ryan, in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I've woken you up, ha ha, good morning.